With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. We made it to Friday. Good for us, good for you. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. We have come to the end of the preseason, and we are getting ready to start things off.
We've also, if I may shake your hand,
yeah,
if I may shake yours,
right,
we've also come to the final episode of year one of First Things First.
Absolutely.
The next time we talk, it will be the beginning of year two. Congrats to you, to you.
Pat ourselves on the back just a little bit.
It's been a ton of fun. We're
going
to be better than ever.
Let's get to it then. Lots on the program this morning.
I think somebody used to say that on TV. Back in
better than ever.
That used to be pretty good.
That is true.
Still is. Jalen Ramsey is talking even more trash. An NFL head coach is enamored with Saquon Barkley. But Baker, Baker, Baker. That's where we kick things off. Baker Mayfield played last night in the Browns' final preseason game. He had a decent outing, completing 9 of his 16 passes for 138 yards in a win over the Lions. And since Tyrod Taylor has been named the starter for the Cleveland Browns when the season starts, it will be the last time we see Baker, barring injuries, for a while. Not a bad preseason for the number one overall pick. Nick, what does Baker Mayfield need to do to improve before he becomes the starter for this Cleveland franchise?
As a rookie quarterback, even as the number one overall pick, I would argue every single part of his game needs to improve and will have room to improve for, the next 6 to 8 years. But I don't think there's anything he can do to improve to make himself the starter. He's not the backup quarterback because of anything he has or hasn't done. He's the backup quarterback because in Cleveland there are things right now more important than Baker Mayfield's development. And that is allowing guys on this roster, the only guy on this roster with a championship pedigree got cut 2 days ago because he was part of insider trading allegedly. Like,
yes,
it's helping the guys who have won 0 games in their NFL career, 1 game in their NFL career, even if that career's been 2 years, learn how to win. It's about helping guys at the coaching staff potentially keep their jobs, and it's about not having the rest of your team demoralized by a quarterback, whether it was last year DeShone Kizer or this year a rookie Baker Mayfield, kneecap your chances by critical turnovers that rookie quarterbacks make. And so for all those reasons, it's, to me, less about what Baker didn't do this preseason and more about what they expect from Tyrod this regular season as to why Baker's not the starter.
So you see, all that being said, what could Baker Mayfield learn by watching, by sitting on the bench and watching Tyrod Taylor play?
Well, this is, I'm going to go back to Baker's kind of leaving college and coming into pro football. He won the Heisman Trophy, and he did have some things on and off the field that people were concerned about. So leading up to the combine, all the interview process, he aced all those things. Like, people were impressed by Baker Mayfield. Even one organization, I think that being the Browns, thought that he had a photographic memory. Now, I showed videos of Baker leading Oklahoma. He was doing dances. They were doing a bunch of other things that I thought in the NFL locker room, I thought that kind of stuff was transferable. So now we get to the OTAs. We hear about Baker that he is under Tyrod. They got a good relationship. He's transitioned into Cleveland. Some people might question him being the face of the franchise, doing some ads, doing some advertisement. I don't. So for me, being August the 31st, seeing the whole process, forget last night, forget about training camp. The kid has done well. If I was given a grade, you'd have to give him an A because he won the league over. There was even someone told me that New England was trying to trade up because they were interested in Baker Mayfield.
When they thought, and it should be noted, they were trying to trade up not to the number one pick of the draft. When people thought Baker could be the third quarterback taken, maybe even the fourth quarterback taken. So when people say, oh, well, New England tried to trade up from 31 to, no, it wouldn't have been 31 to 1. It would have been 31 plus 23 to, oh, I don't know, 12, 11, where Baker could have been going.
Right, so it's a long way of saying it, Jenna, but it's a great question. What does he do next? Keep doing exactly what he's been doing because he has made every stage of this becoming an NFL quarterback very, very important. Just make the next stage, which means in watching pro football and watching pro quarterbacks because he's never seen an NFL game. Next Sunday is going to be his first time seeing the heat when they say, oh, man, well, the preseason, it's 30 to 50% faster in the regular season. It is. And we can't teach him that until he sees it. The overall defense is what he'll see. They'll be more exotic. And how do you win and lose football games? What the rest of this team is trying to learn, Baker is right in with the rest of them. So I think just keep trying to master. He's very, very smart. He hadn't taken any stages for granted.
Sure.
And, you know, so for me, keep doing what he's doing, which a lot of kids – they get tripped up in that. They start getting ahead of themselves. They start thinking about, when am I going to be a starter? Man, they have a lot of other things that distract them from playing their best football.
Because we did hear from Baker earlier on, I don't want to back up. I don't want to play the second guy. Mm-hmm. I don't want to sit and watch. I want to actually play. So to see what you said, him handle himself the way he has, knowing he is the future face of the franchise.
And even saying, I want to play is the right thing.
Yeah.
Because we would feel some kind of way if the kid's been a superstar and we would say, he would be saying, you know something, I want to back up. If Josh Allen says that, we wouldn't think positive about it. If Lamar was to say that or any other of the other top prospects.
And this is going to be emotionally or mentally the most trying part of the process.
Yeah.
Because now he doesn't get to play in the games anymore. Even if you're not the starter, you know he's known going into every single preseason game, I'm going to get to play. And now the hope for the Browns is that he does not. Now, in all likelihood, with the NFL's new concussion protocol, with the way quarterbacks get dinged, in all likelihood, he will get to play.
Now, that is a great point. I didn't think about that.
The concussion part of it?
And just how that he might have to be ready for 5 to 10 plays.
Correct.
Forget about, like, oh, which part of the season is he going to start?
I would say it's more likely than not that Baker's first NFL pass comes in a game where he was not the starter. Comes in a game where...
or he wasn't...
just like preseason game number 3, where he got put in because Tyrod's getting checked out because something happened, and then he comes back out. That's incredibly difficult. And it's also difficult not to know when you're going to get to be out there. And so he's going to have to not only make the most of his practice time so he develops as a player, but also when you've been not just a star player in college, but the best player in college football, arguably for 2 consecutive years, to go from that to being a guy that is helping other guys on the sideline, trying to learn by watching instead of learn by doing, I would have to imagine for anyone in any field where they've been a top performer and they've been in the mix, it's very hard to go to the sidelines.
What about if you take all that other stuff away, just from what you both saw on the field, how he progressed over a couple of preseason games that he's played? How is he doing? Has he come a long way from when, you know, a couple weeks ago when he first got into the game?
Well, if we look at the Oklahoma, our Big 12 quarterbacks that have struggled, they've been basically system quarterbacks, college quarterbacks. I think Baker, as a Heisman Trophy winner, he's proven to people that he can be a good pro. He can play under center. He has shown that. So there's a lot of things about where he came from that you have to be able to get beyond. I think that when you see him throw the ball, not only in the pocket, but on the move, he has that accuracy that he did have in college football. And the thing that I think is very important, and I saw it with Sam Darnold, the game is not moving too fast for him. Like, I believe he's not a force multiplier today, as our guy Mangini says, as quarterback, but that guy is a force multiplier in NFL, and he's going to be for a long time. And I think in showing people that early, it's very important for young, unproven guys coming into the league.
Nick. And he also is going to have a smaller margin of error and a bigger curb to get over than the vast majority of other quarterbacks in this league because of his size. And that is something he's going to have to combat, I think, for certainly the early part of his career. Not that he's going to get bigger, but that it's going to be harder for him to adjust. I know that you can explain much better than I can about why his size, with the way he throws the football, the way he sees the field, why he doesn't concern you as much as for others.
And but backing up Tyrod, not to interrupt you, will give him a lot of reps because they're almost the same size.
Absolutely.
Baker might be a little bit taller.
And so that's one of the things that I was thinking about watching the game yesterday, though, because he and Tyrod are about the same size. But when you're watching the game last night, and when they did a cut to the huddle or breaking the huddle, and he's almost a head shorter than his offensive lineman, that is, to me, it's a good reminder of one of the reasons why people say you like your quarterback to be 6'4", 6'3", to 6'5", because you are just in the moment, you're realizing it is going to be harder for him to see the field. He is going to have to be able to make throws other guys aren't going to be able to make just because of the size discrepancy.
But then he can look around the league and say, oh, Russell Wilson's doing it and Drew Brees is doing it, and there is a pathway for me to be successful.
And having Tyrod right there, and that intel that Tyrod would be telling, because Tyrod throws over the top too, so there will be carryover. I think he's in one of the best spots that a rookie could be in.
All right, good start, guys. Coming up, has Lamar Jackson proven that he can be a starter in the National Football League? That's next. This is First Things First. A new topic now, one we like to call Jalen Ramsey's Got Takes. The Jaguars cornerback is carving out quite a little niche for himself with opinions on other teams, other players, other game plans. Earlier this offseason, you may remember he took aim at half of the quarterbacks in the league in a GQ article. This time, Gronk was the target in a piece on ESPN.com. Jalen said, here it is. I don't think Gronk's good. Let me say, I don't think Gronk is as great as people think he is. Anytime Gronk has been matched up with a corner, he's had a very bad game. And that corner has had a very good game. All right, CC, I'll let you react for a second. Then, has he put a target on his back with all the trash talking? Because he's going to go into the season with all these teams and all these players having read and heard what he said about, at this point, just about every big player in the game.
Any athlete that would say the things in any sport that Jalen, if it was baseball, if it was hockey, NBA, of course, they would be targeted. Now, how are you going to target them and everything? But, yes, they would be the target because we don't see our athletes like that. We don't see athletes criticizing other athletes as openly. Now, we think we do, and we think that we have some characters of the past that have potentially played football, but we haven't seen that many people like Jalen in the NFL. I would say the most recent guy is Steve Smith. And Steve wasn't as outspoken as him. Steve backed up his talk, too. His was more competitive on game day. We also saw Ocho Cinco. He used to make a list of defensive backs and everything. But it wasn't that these guys can't play. He was saying, I'm identifying these guys, that I'm going to encounter them. And that was more out of respect, I thought, than, you know, saying negative things. So I don't think it's in Jalen's best interest. At this point in his career, he is already all pro. Him and one other corner were all pro last year. So it lets you know what select company that he's already in. The other corner was Xavier Rhodes. They were first team all pro. Let your play do your talking. And I'm like Tony Dungy. Tony Dungy said something yesterday that he hoped that some of Jalen Ramsey's teammates are coaches talk to him and let him know that he's a football player. He's a good football player and is a great football player. You don't have to criticize other players. It's not something that we're used to seeing in the NFL. And it's just not a good look for a great, great player. And I just believe that offensive linemen, they will target Jalen during the game. Be like, oh, okay, how offensive linemen? There's a number of screen passes during the game. Also, once a lineman stops blocking his guy, you end up running down the field.
Explain to the audience real quick what happens on the screen pass. because I don't think they
their
totally
number one
understand.
Assignment of offensive linemen is to be able to let your guys go through.
Let the D linemen go through.
Especially the center and the guard. And once they do that, they're on the perimeter and they're looking for cornerbacks or safeties that they can cut them down. They can hit them anywhere. That, like, it's one of the most violent plays that we see in football. Most of these DBs are trying to avoid them. But I just know the nature of this game. And I know offensive linemen, they will be trying to go out of their way. You say, well, why wouldn't wide receivers? Wide receivers have a different job to do. They have to concentrate about different things. But he will be targeted in the NFL. It's just not a good look.
All right, so here's why I think all of your concerns are valid. Here's why, despite the concerns, as a consumer of the product, I like it. You got 1,600 players in the league. I would not like it at all if all of them, or even the majority of them, or even dozens of them,
right,
acted like this. I don't mind that we got one guy that says, oh, I'm out here. I think I'm the best in the world at what I do. I think I've been the best corner in this league since the day I walked
he
off the campus.
He could have said that
Florida
without
State.
Saying...
Without cutting down other people.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He could just be promoting himself.
I mean, that would be easy.
And that would be more in line with what you're saying we've had guys do in the past, which is promote themselves without cutting down other players. But You don't always appreciate Barry Sanders handing the ball to the ref if Andre Rison isn't the other end of the extreme doing the things he did in the end zone.
Right.
I'm okay with there being one guy way out on the extreme as long as he understands, which I would imagine he does because he's been playing football his whole life, everything Chris is saying.
He hasn't been playing pro football.
No, he hasn't been playing pro football. But
He hadn't had the media attention. Okay, so my thing is, it's okay to be a fan of how a guy, but this does not help him become better. It does not help him become more popular. So,
oh, well, that last part, I think,
hold on, real quick.
I apologize, Jenna. I do think listen, you and I might run in different circles as far as popularity goes, as far as the way people view Jalen Ramsey. Like, I think the folks that I talk to, non-players, people, consumers of the game, love this stuff. Younger folks
but
love this stuff.
And all those people, they don't know anything about this.
That's
NFL.
Fine, but that's but they still help his popularity.
I've been associated with the NFL 3 of the last 4 decades, all right? Mm-hmm. Like, I played in them, 3. Mm-hmm. So my association of friends is broad and deep, being football-wise and non-football-wise. All right? I've seen the greatest players play. And talking, it did not help them. Now, in your small circle of friends, yeah, it might be popular. But overall, when you have Hall of Fame coaches like Tony Dungy, when you have a guy saying, I don't want to play for the Dallas Cowboys. They didn't draft me. Okay, we've got a lot of players say that. You know who they drafted? Ezekiel Elliott. Well, really, well, they made a mistake. Oh, well, the Dallas coaches, I felt like they said they wanted me, and Jerry Jones, I think he vetoed it. A lot of stuff, he don't know if it's fact. What he said about Gronk.
Oh, what he said about Gronk is patently false.
It's not true. So you and your friends sitting around chuckling, I think this is popular, well, at least get your information right.
Sure. But you said it doesn't help him. That could be accurate. Now, I will say in that game he played against A.J. Green, that trash talk he did mano a mano to A.J. Green did help him. A.J. Green got himself kicked out of the game, not Jalen kicked out of the game.
But a lot of that was stuff he did in the game, talking to him throughout the game.
Absolutely.
Not in a national article or a national publication.
Listen, I'm not arguing that. Go ahead, Jenna.
No, what I was just going to say is I think we're also forgetting the fact that he's a place cornerback for a small market team. Mm-hmm. He plays cornerback for the Jacksonville Jaguars. You'd have to do a lot to put yourself on a national stage where GQ is doing a feature on you. How many football players will they do a feature on? Where ESPN.com follows it up with a long feature on you. So my question was originally going to be, what does this do for him besides give him a little more, maybe popularity is the wrong word, maybe notoriety is the wrong word, but a little spotlight on him? And is that good for him? Does that make him a better football player?
Jalen has to determine if it's going to be good for him. We see guys in the spotlight all the time. Guys react different types of way. But most guys, They know how to handle the spotlight, especially when you come. He was a big-time recruit from Tennessee when he went to Florida. Tennessee's his home state. That's where he's from. Went to Florida State, was All-American there. You know, was a great football player. High draft pick for Jacksonville in the state where he played college football. Yeah, he's doing all the other stuff that he should be to be a great player, except all the talking because it's just totally unnecessary.
Oh, I agree that it's unnecessary. I also think he's put a bigger target on his back. Or, as far as the popularity, we can set that aside. Like, different people can view the same thing. Some people love it, some people hate it. But what I do know is this. In week one, he plays the Giants. And Beckham, who's quarterbacked by Eli Manning, who he said was terrible. In week two, they play the Patriots, who has Gronk, who he said, you put a corner on him, you shut him down. And so what we
But that's how dominant Gronk has been, that you have to change whole defensive
He's
scheme.
No.
Gronk is already in the conversation of one of the five greatest tight ends
ever. Listen, his takes are erroneous, but they're still entertaining.
Oh, I can see and why so, you'd like no, it. Yes. Okay, no problem. Okay, so, I get it now.
Yeah.
Oh, man, forget about some information. Forget about some facts. Like, let's just forget about it. Let's just see who's cute.
Here's what I know. That, yes, he's put a bigger target on his back. Sure, there's no doubt about it. But I also know that I am even more excited now to see, okay, let's see if he can back it up week two, match up against Gronk, see if you can shut him down. And if he doesn't, he's going to have to eat it even more than he otherwise would. And if he does, we're going to hear more.
And then you know what? If he does, you know what, in week number three? You still got to do it again. Look at your list, man.
Yeah.
And the next week, you know what you got to
do,
Nick?
Again.
And you got to do it again.
It's a hard job.
Yeah.
And he's made even harder. It's a hard job. He's made
really?
Even harder. But I can appreciate that.
Quick question.
I can, from afar, I can be entertained by.
Does the team sit down and talk to him? Does Doug Marrone talk to him? Is Coughlin talking to him? Is this something that he can be reprimanded? Or is this they're just going to let this go and let it play
Tom
out on the
Coughlin,
field?
You did a great job with the kid, OBJ, in New York. Remember that?
Yeah.
That got you fired? I think you would say something to the next superstar that you have and compared to letting it spiral out of control.
Are you surprised he hasn't?
He did, but not for this round of
But this is a new round of
talking.
My point. Like, are you
Tom Coughlin and his old principles? They are still very, very effective. And Tom Coughlin needs to have a conversation because that's in the best interest of the player going forward. That's in the best interest of Jalen. All right. And get him to watch some film so he can see. So he is going to talk trash. At least he can be studied.
Oh, his points, they're erroneous.
But
they were still entertaining.
I can understand.
Got to take a break. Coming up, a great story in Seattle might be getting even better next on First Things First. Catch an MLB doubleheader tomorrow. First, Giancarlo Stanton leads the Yankees against the Tigers, and then the Rays battle Cleveland. It all starts at 3:30 Eastern on FS1, or you can stream it live on the Fox Sports app.
Shout out to Giancarlo for hitting that milestone last night. Good for him.
Time to go viral. Last season, Giannis Antetokounmpo emerged as an MVP candidate when he averaged 27 points, 10 boards, 5 assists. However, he's not satisfied, still working on his game. Check this out. Giannis with Kobe yesterday on the gram wrote, quote, "Find a way and have no regrets. Kobe Bean Bryant. Thank you for allowing me to work out with you. I learned a lot."
Listen, Giannis is right after LeBron and Embiid, I would think, the leading candidate for MVP going into the season. 27-10-5 is what you said, right?
Yeah.
27-10-5 on, I think, 54%. Great defense. And now, for the first time in his career, he's going to have an excellent head coach. I'm so excited to see what the next level of his game can be.
You forget about the brow? What about the brow?
Anthony Davis, I think that team's going to struggle to make the playoffs, so it'll be tough to win MVP.
Yeah, I love to see this generation of players working on their skill with players who were great.
Yeah.
Like, I love to see it. The transfer of that knowledge, because Kobe had this knowledge transferred to him. So, great to see.
And Giannis will never have the mid-range game Kobe did, obviously, but if he could improve his mid-range game just a little bit, it would make him even closer to unguardable. So, that's a great
guy. Oh, so you believe in the Mamba mentality.
Listen, he's the eighth greatest player ever. No question about
it. Let's break out the list one more time.
Jalen Smith.
Jalen Ramsey.
Jalen Ramsey, yeah.
Takes. We got takes.
Erroneous. Yeah. Time for some stories to start your morning. The Alabama Crimson Tide are the betting favorites to win the national championship this season. And how about this? At plus 175, they've got the best odds to win the title since the 2005 Trojans. So you see, is Alabama really that much better than anybody else?
Alabama's very good, but part of the reason why they're the favorite and that big is because you have to get into the playoff system. So their ability to be able to win their division, get to the SEC championship, win that game, and get into the Final Four, that's the reason why. The other teams, Clemson, Ohio State, their journeys might be a little tougher. Washington, but Bama, they got it now. They got players.
And Bama's ability, as illustrated by last year, to not even have to make the SEC championship end up and still make the playoff.
Because their reputation.
Because their reputation, which and obviously they proved out deserved by winning the whole thing last year. So Bama's a team that if you're going to beat them, you better beat them early. Because by the end of the season, when everyone's beat up, like Bama's, okay, we're beat up too, but we got more guys coming.
Yes.
So it's very tough to beat them in the playoffs. So I understand why they're such a big favorite.
All right, moving on to the NFL. Last night, A.J. McCarron started the Bills' final preseason game. 13 of 34, two interceptions, sacked five times. As Nick likes to say, that ain't great. Nick, A.J. McCarron ain't great, right?
Oh, ain't great. Ain't a great option. It also reminds me that Hugh Jackson, who still has his job, by the way, tried to trade a second and a third round pick to make this guy his franchise quarterback a year ago. Remember, Sashi Brown didn't turn in the paperwork. Sashi's gone. Hugh's still there. Listen, the Bills appear to have the worst quarterback situation in the entire NFL. They have three options. They are all awful options right now. And that was illustrated by you. Start A.J. McCarron, even in a preseason game, let him play four quarters, that's what you're going to get.
It's going to be hard for all these quarterbacks. We talk about the lack of proven guys outside, the ability to catch the ball, but more importantly, Gemma, don't have a good offensive line. At what point would you say A.J. has proven he could be an NFL quarterback? I would say none. So I'm not surprised that A.J. struggled last night.
All right, let's move on to the Seahawks. Starting linebacker K.J. Wright is expected to be out at least 2 weeks, opening the door for rookie Shaquem Griffin to start in his place. What a feel-good story playing out for us in Seattle. Griffin's left hand was amputated when he was 4 years old because of amniotic band syndrome, and now he may be starting in the NFL. See, what does this mean for the Seahawks?
It's been one of the greatest stories we've seen in the NFL, and the kid has trusted the process. He went to the right team, I told you, because they want speed. They want guys who play with energy, led them in tackles throughout the preseason, has proven himself that not only is he fast guy, but the speed transfers to good defensive football. He's going to be a good NFL player.
And I thought the best point anyone has made about Shaquem Griffin was a point you made early on about the impact he would have on the other guys on his roster during the dog days of training camp, saying, look at how hard he's working. Look at what he's doing. If he's doing it, I can do it.
Yes.
And so not only has he helped out his teammates, but now a teammate's injured, a good teammate, by the way, K.J. Wright.
Yes.
Now he's got to step in
right.
And start.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And has a lot of the same skill set as KD has.
K.J.
K.J. Speed, can play in space, yep. Good tackler.
Absolutely.
All right, and we're going to end on Adrian Peterson. Washington's running back had some strong words for our guy Chris Carter. He told USA Today, watching some of the things they said about me, man, it really hurt me to the core. Not only are they black men, but these are people I looked up to. And these are people that made mistakes, especially Chris Carter. So some of the things that came out of his mouth, not only personally, but about me as a player, he's washed up and this and that and the other. And he should just retire. How dare you? What am I going to do when I ball out this year? I'm going to have all my fans look up all the people who said something negative about me and put them on blast and prove that when they are on TV, they don't know what they're talking about. All right, see, there's a lot there to digest. What do you make of Peterson's comments?
Well, first things first, for one, I didn't say he was washed up, and I didn't say he should just retire. All right? Those things aren't true. All right? Adrian's inability to deal with what all people go through in the NFL. One day, I'm not going to be myself. This is not Adrian Peterson 2007. In 2007, I was on a national show then talking about Adrian Peterson. People talking about how special is he. I said, he is one of the rare people that we have seen over the last 20 years. You can have a real conversation. Can this kid from high school go and play pro football? Yeah, I was on TV talking then. Was Adrian sending me notes then? What about when he was potentially breaking the rushing record in Minnesota, the team that I played for? Was he calling me then? Was he saying, hey, man, thanks, man, as a black man. I appreciate you out there saying good things about this other black man. But also, man, you're in the league with 1,600 players. Over 70% of those players are black. So I'm supposed to sit here and just criticize the white guys? Brady, I'm open season. Edelman, let me rip him. Gronk, all right? Let me do that. No, I'm an equal opportunity employer, all right? I didn't say you were washed up. Do I think you're good enough to be a starting running back in a special situation? Like Washington, where their frontline guy got hurt, he is their best option running the football. But guys, Adrian's age, it's not me. Let me tell you what the history of the NFL says. Three guys, since the merger, 1970, have had 1,000-yard seasons. Three guys had four seasons. Riggo did it twice. Now, this is in the 80s. Franco did it once. Now, these aren't the stout running backs of Adrian Peterson and Frank Gore. God bless him. He did it two seasons ago.
At Adrian's age or older, 33 year old.
So this is what we're talking about. This is not me just grabbing something out of the sky. I don't have nothing better to do. NFL history says that running backs at that age, they will not rush for 1,000 yards. But also, Adrian, did you listen to the show last year? When this guy right here looked me in the face and said, you're stupid, man. You don't believe that guy right there. He's washed up, Chris. I'm telling you he's washed up. But you know what I do? The same thing I do for all the other great players. I give them benefit of the doubt. Because when I was playing at the end, people gave me the benefit of the doubt. They didn't say the truth. But I was washed up. I shouldn't have been playing. I should have stayed in the booth, and I should have stayed on TV. I should have never went and played with the Dolphins. Man, I was bad. But I know, I'm self-aware. Adrian, keep doing your thing. You're fighting against NFL history. You're not fighting against me. It's not good for my brand. It's not good for you to be arguing with you. All right? I hope you have a good season.
That's the thing that I want the audience to know here, is that, Chris, last year I said Adrian was no longer, I said, an NFL-caliber running back. And James Harrison came for me, and you came for me, and then he goes to Arizona.
Did Adrian send me anything?
No.
I just looked bad all last year.
Right, because what happened was his first game in Arizona.
Let me tell you something. Any day that I'm on this show and that guy looked like he know more football than me, it's not a good day.
Not a great day.
Let me tell you something. I'm rocked to my core, okay? I'm upset. This guy knows more football than I do.
It was a touch and go situation for a while. Now, and so Adrian had his moments last year, but now he's a year older, even with those two monster games. And I will give him credit. Last year, he had two excellent games with Arizona, two games where he combined for over 300 yards in those two games. The problem is everything in between. The 11 carries for 21, the 21 carries for 29, the 14 carries for 26. And now he's a year older. I would argue he's in a tougher situation in Washington than he was in Arizona. And this isn't – and the one thing that I'm going to defend my guy here for a second, because there was one part of the quote that was wildly unfair. Adrian has had, let's call it, a checkered history outside of football, most notably an incident a few years ago in the state of Texas while he was playing for the Vikings. Chris didn't allude to any of that, didn't make any of this personal, didn't say, oh, Andy, there's a lot of pot shots one could take. And he didn't do any of that. And Adrian to say, especially a guy like Chris Carter, who I know's made a lot of mistakes, that's got
nothing.
Yeah,
I made a big mistake coming back trying to play that 16th year.
Right, and almost as big a mistake arguing
ended up in the hospital.
Right, with a lacerated kidney. And so, like, that was to me out of bounds, but I get why Adrian Peterson's got to do this. He didn't have to say it, but he's got to believe all these guys are wrong. I'm proving all wrong.
He has to believe that.
And he's one of the all-time greatest players in the history of this league. And if he can add his name to that list, I will doff my cap to him. Congrats. Good luck. God bless. But it's our job to analyze it. And I don't see it coming. You don't see it coming. Shannon, who's the other guy who was taking shots at there, he doesn't see it coming. Maybe we'll all be wrong. Luckily, we'll actually get to see.
All right, let's move on now to Lamar Jackson, who wrapped
maybe
up
the baby's diapers just a little gas.
First preseason.
Maybe they didn't do number two.
In a win over Washington, the last pick of the first round in this year's draft went 9-for-15 for 109 yards. He also ran for a touchdown on a high note in an up and down month for Lamar Jackson. But he's come a long way from draft day when some wondered if he would have to change positions to play in the NFL. CeCe, has Lamar Jackson shown he's capable of being an NFL quarterback?
Yes, I think he did that through the draft process. I'm glad the team that didn't look at him potentially changing positions, they drafted him. Is he an NFL quarterback? Yes. I'm glad the question wasn't, is he a starting NFL quarterback, because I can't answer that part right now. But Lamar Jackson, his skill set, it will transfer. He needs some support around him. They have to be able to run a certain system. Nick knows 99% of the players in my book, they're system players. And now you need a special system for him, because right now he's not going to be comfortable just doing pro dropbacks in the pocket. Three-step, five-step, seven-step. No, you're going to have to be able to move the pocket, and he's got to be able to take care of his body. He does not have the type of frame that would last a long time in this league. So you have to be able to make sure that he's aware of that, and you have to be able to move the pocket so they can't sit back there and be able to tee off on him. But I do think he will continue to grow. He had five preseason games he played in, had some up and down moments. He got better as the preseason went on. But he's in a good situation because Baltimore drafted him as a quarterback, and they're going to support him as a quarterback. It's not as if some team drafted him and they think that he can play some other position.
Listen, the key is not only the five preseason games, which that's just dumb luck. Like, he's on one of two teams that gets five preseason games, being in the Hall of Fame game. But the other is it wasn't like this preseason. It was a steady progression. His first game, he was bad except for the run. The one electric run. Oh, my God. His second game, he was, I think, worse than the first game, or at least on the same level. His third game against the Colts, he started off 0-for-4, and they were bad misses. 0-for-4 that led to 3 and outs.
And then,
so up to that moment, he was 11 of 32 as a passer. Then at the end of the second quarter, into the first half of that Colts game, they went to a no huddle. They're trying to get in field goal range. He got in a rhythm. From that moment going forward, second half of the Colts game to the end of the preseason, he's 23 of 36. So of his first 32 passes, 11 of 32. 23 of 36 to close it out. You saw it, like, so you saw him okay. It's not slowed down the way it needs to, but it is not all of a sudden on super fast forward.
Yes.
It is getting a little bit easier for him. You are seeing enough to where he's a credible threat, because what they're going to try to do with him with these packages that we think they're going to use in Baltimore, those don't work if he's out there just as a runner. He has to be a credible passing threat. And he's done enough in the last 2.5 preseason games to where you can't see, oh, Lamar's on the field, they're running something. Right. It's still possible they're passing it. So I think his learning curve was going to be as steep as anyone's in my eyes, other than Josh Allen, of any of the first-round picks. But we saw him progressively get a little bit better, and that was critically important to me.
So he's gotten better, but let's not forget that RG3 had a pretty good preseason.
Mm-hmm.
Who backs up Joe Flacco in the early part of the regular season?
RG3. He's got to be. I mean, he's got it because he can do more things in the offense. Say the offense is the volume of it. Right now, I believe RG3... 90% of that, RG3 is cool with. RG3 can do 100% of what Lamar can do. Now, as far as Lamar, I believe Lamar could probably do about 40 to 60% of what Flacco can do. So there's going to be a gap in there, even if you decide to go with Lamar as the backup.
So that means that if Flacco's hurt, RG3 is the guy they'd probably go to. But if Flacco's not hurt and they're putting a different quarterback on the field for what we're talking about, that would be Lamar. I don't think they're going.
We're going to know that because you have to make the distinction before the game. Which guy is 1, 2, and 3? And or Saturday when they get to final cutdown, is RG3 on the opening day roster?
Right. There is a chance RG3 could get cut. I don't think he will be. I don't think Chris does either. But there's no chance Lamar gets cut. And, again, I'm glad he got that fifth preseason game. 9 of 15, 7 yards per pass, coming off a 7 of 10, 10 yards per pass. Like, it's a good close to add on to the second half of that third preseason game against the Colts.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, is Saquon good enough as a rookie to lead the Giants back to the playoffs next? First things first. Back here on First Things First. Look who's here. Super Bowl champ David Deal joins us.
Always a pleasure. It's a new season. Here we go.
Smells like football.
It does smell like football, right?
That's just the shampoo and conditioner. <this morning. laughs> It doesn't smell like turf or dirt or anything
like
that.
Good. I'm glad I'm one person away from you. We haven't seen much Saquon Barkley this preseason. Let me put it this way. He's had 4 rushes all preseason, sidelined with a hamstring injury. But he's been practicing and is scheduled to play in the season opener against the Jaguars. But that doesn't mean there isn't high hopes for the number 2 overall pick. Former head coach Bruce Arians summarized it best when he said, "Holy bleep, he's special." David, let me start with you. How much of the Giants' success depends on Saquon Barkley and how far he can take this team?
I definitely think he has a huge huge influence on this offense in the way that he plays. But having said that, you don't expect him to come in and have the numbers and the stats that Ezekiel Elliott had, because Ezekiel already had an established offensive line, where now with this offensive line with the New York Giants, they're still trying to form together and get that continuity as a group, mm-hmm. because this is their first season together and they're learning Pat Shurmur's offense together. But the thing that you love about Saquon is just not running the football. You can use those passes and those one-on-ones as an extension of the run. So let's go back to last year and think about the way that the Los Angeles Rams were able to use Todd Gurley. Okay, you want to have him one-on-one, 11 personnel, one tight end, one running back. Okay, let's take the running back and let's split him out in the slot. Okay, you're going to have a linebacker in there. You're going to put the linebacker on him. We're going to go to that one-on-one matchup all the time. Okay, next time you go 11 personnel, you put them in the slot, they bring in a safety, what are you going to do? Motion them into the backfield, condense the formation, and run the zone scheme right down their throat. So having him out on the field and being able to basically manipulate the type of coverages in the one-on-one matchups you're looking for offensively helps everybody else on the outside at the wide receiver position, but it also helps the offensive line by being able to create space, dictate what coverage and what type of formation that they're going to get defensively scheme-wise, and attack him that way. So it is crucial for him to stay healthy and continue to get better each and every week. But with the other elements that they have in this offense, it's truly up to Eli Manning to get this team to the playoffs.
Mm. So you're saying, from what you've seen, because I want you to break down the offensive line.
Okay.
Because I don't think we can talk about Barkley. Your experience as an offensive lineman and what you've seen is a running back like him makes your job easier.
No question, because what he allows you to do is set up your zone scheme, set up your power schemes and whatever you want, and know that the minute that this player hits the hole, he has the explosiveness, he's quick twitch, he can make people miss in the hole, and he's a guy that can run through those arm tackles. So when you have a running back like this that demands that type of attention, it helps everybody out, especially the offensive line.
I have incredibly high expectations for him this season, if for no other reason than I saw two rookie running backs in not identical but similar situations last year have monster years. I saw Kareem Hunt for Kansas City have 1,300 plus yards rushing, 400 yards receiving. That was a team that had a decent but not a great offensive line. That was a team that had a quarterback that has a lot of trait similarities to Eli Manning, and they didn't have a wide receiver nearly as good as Odell, but they had a wide receiver that you had to worry about over the top.
Absolutely.
In Tyreek Hill. I watched Alvin Kamara in New Orleans. Now, Kamara is a better receiver than I think even Saquon's going to be, but and Breeze is amazing, but they don't have an amazing offensive line, but they had a wide receiver you had to worry about, Michael Thomas, and Kamara was instant impact. I don't think it's a stretch at all to say Saquon is a better athlete and more gifted than Kareem Hunt or Alvin Kamara, that Saquon has more physical tools than either of those players, both of whom were mid-round draft picks. I think Saquon is a guy that he could be the third straight rookie to win the rushing title. Zeke won it 2 years ago. Kareem won it last year. That wouldn't shock me. And if he doesn't win the rushing title, I would imagine as far as yards from scrimmage, he, Todd Gurley, a couple of, he will be a top five guy in that category, no doubt.
And going along with that, in regards to what he's doing for the rest of this offense, think about this. Saquon being in the lineup, Odell Beckham Jr., when he was drafted, was going crazy because, once again, when you can dictate where they're going to bracket coverage, where they're going to put the safety if they need him down in run support, he's going to be able to get those one-on-ones out on the outside. And that's the one great thing that you love about what Pat Shurmur brings to this offense that they haven't had in a long time. I mean, let's face it, last year we're watching 11 personnel out of Ben McAdoo 70% of the times running quick slants and the comeback route on the outside. The thing that you love about Pat Shurmur, he'll go 11 personnel, one running back, one tight end. Then he'll go 12, two tight ends. Then he'll go 13 and bring in a jumbo. Then all of a sudden he's going 3-4 wides. But the great thing is he's the one dictating the tempo and the pace of the football game, where a lot of times offensively, okay, what coverage are they in? What kind of scheme are they running? He's not worried about that. He wants to be on the attack and let your players play free so that at that split second, you're not thinking, because at that time it's too late. You're just reacting and playing fast football.
See, we saw two running backs be difference makers for a season. We saw it in Todd Gurley's first year. We saw it in Zeke's first year. Is Saquon good enough with what you know about how Eli Manning's going to play and not knowing exactly who Odell is until he gets, back into game action? Is he enough to be a difference maker on this team?
I think he's going to be a special player. And Bruce Arians, he's been an offensive mind in this league. Before he was a head coach, he was an offensive coordinator. He has special, special traits. Forget about his character. His character is without approach. And also his football character, how much time he spends working on it, how infectious he is in the locker room, how hard he works. Football is very, very important to him. So I expect him to be a great player in this league. The only question I have is, can they give him the ball 20 times as a running back? Because the only thing that he didn't do at Penn State was just be a workhorse.
If they have a lead,
can they give him the ball 8-10 times in the fourth quarter to be able to grind out that clock? So I'm not talking about when the leaves change. I'm just talking about how do you win football game. When you have a great running back, all right, and late in the football game, them great running backs, they're able to put the game away. That's the only thing that I haven't seen. That's why I can't give him credit, because I just haven't seen it yet.
And Dave Gettleman obviously thinks that he can do that and everything else. He said it. I mean, Gettleman, we talked about how when Lonzo went number two overall, Magic Johnson said, get ready to retire another jersey. Gettleman said, when you draft a player, number two overall, supposed to be a Hall of Famer. He said that. Yeah. I mean, that's the GM who picked this player.
Said his talent was so obvious that my mom knows.
Right. And so, for me, I have less questions about Saquon than I would most top five picks because of the position, because of the profile. You guys also know, and I think everyone at the table thinks Odell is worst case scenario, one of the three best receivers in the league. I like Evan Ingram in year two. There's a lot of this offense I like a lot, so I'm going to circle back to exactly what you said. Eli is set up for success as far as a weaponry standpoint, yep, as well as any point, if not better than any point in his career, as far as the weapons. Now, the offensive line might not be exactly what he would have liked. They did go out and get Nate Solder. They spent a high draft pick on Will Hernandez. To me, this is a litmus test year for Eli, as far as was last year just about injuries and bad luck and bad coaching, mm-hmm, or was it about all that plus a guy in year 13 who's now in year 14, like, or in year 15. That's to me what the biggest question mark about the Giants season is. How good is Eli still?
And that's the big question, and this is where he has to prove it out on the football field, because they went out, they said, we're not going to draft the quarterback, which was, mm-hmm, a big thing in New York. We're going to address the offensive line, which they did through the draft and free agency. Everybody's on the outside, is coming back healthy. There's no more excuses about his play on the field. And to circle back about Saquon, one of the greatest things that happened to him in training camp, week two, he goes into blitz protection. All the coaches are yelling, you picked up the wrong guy. You picked up the wrong guy. He goes, no, in the book it has it drawn up here. They're like, no, you picked up the wrong blitzer. He goes, no, in the book, that's what it's drawn up at. They pull the book out. It was drawn up wrong. He was actually doing the play, wow, that he read and did it the way that he was reading in his playbook. And then now they're yelling at the person who drew up,
wow,
that protection.
But, oh, that's
so that's how smart and that's how dialed, yeah, in he is to the playbook, that as a rookie, to be able to step up for that and to say, no, that's what it said in the book. That says a lot about the character of a football player.
Great story.
Great story, David. All right, thank you. Stick around. Coming up, how dominant, speaking of Zeke, will he have to be for the Cowboys to get back to the playoffs? Next on First Things First. Back here at First Things First with David Deal. The Cowboys have some questions to answer heading into this season. How will Dak do in year three? Where can the offense go with a beat-up O-line? And how big of a workload will Ezekiel Elliott have with a less-than-amazing receiving core? No Dez, no Witten, no Michael Irvin. But Zeke is ready. Says this is the most comfortable he has ever felt in the offense. Chris, I'll start with you. How dominant does he need to be for the Cowboys to get back to the playoffs? How good does Zeke have to play?
Okay, even if Dallas's offseason had gone differently, if Jason Witten had continued on the career path, playing at least another year before he decided to move into the broadcast booth. Dez Bryant, even if they had negotiated and brought Dez Bryant back at a reduced salary, a more friendly salary, with this offensive line, I would have been like, Ezekiel Elliott is the best player on that team, and he's getting ready to rush for 1,700 yards. Like, that's the kind of season I thought. And talking to his dad, he's had a tremendous offseason. You have to realize these kids coming out of college, that first offseason is ruined. I mean, they're going from place to place. And the type of year that he had, we know what he went through on and off the field in year number two. So he really hadn't had a great workout regimen. We've seen that he's added some extra bulk muscle. Like, man, he is a great football player. And in year number three with running backs, I think you can go through the history of this league. They pile up some numbers in those early years. So I'm expecting them. Nick and I talked about it. Nick threw it out there.
I think if the Cowboys are going to make the playoffs, Zeke has to have 2,000 yards. I don't know where else the offense is going to come from. I know they're saying, oh, we're going to use him more as a receiver. I believe it when I see it. Zeke, we know what Zeke's great at. We know what he wasn't great at Ohio State, what he hasn't been great at in the NFL. It's not much. He's obviously a great runner. He's a better than he gets credit for blitz pickup guy. He's a good blocker.
Yep. Yes.
The one part of his game on the field that he has been average or below average, that's catching the football. So I don't think you're all of a sudden going to change
that. And some of that is just lack of attempts or lack of making that a focal
point. A priority, because you haven't had to, because he's been so good rushing the football. I look at the Cowboys and I look at their weaponry offensively and I say, okay, where are you going to get your touchdowns? Where are you going to get your yards? I think it's number 21. And I don't think 2,000 yards is out of the question for him. He had 1,630 yards his rookie year despite having a terrible week one and not playing in week 17. So, like, he was weeks 2 through 16 on a 1,900-yard pace.
But the problem is his dominance is only based upon how good and how healthy this offensive line is up front. So already we've got Zach Martin, the all-pro right guard that has a bum knee, hyperextended bone bruise. Travis Frederick now with the autoimmune disease that he just had. We know he's going to be out significant time. Haven't we seen in the past, like in 2017 when Tyron Smith wasn't on the field, what it meant to this offense?
For sure.
So when you're talking about a center and an all-pro and Travis Frederick, you're not going to be able to replace him with somebody off of the street. Yesterday, Stephen Jones, oh, we're in the market looking for offensive linemen. There's not a center that you're going to get out there right now that's going to come in and be able to do the job that he does, especially the vital importance of a center, not only making calls in protection and guiding the offensive line, but at that position, you can give up zero ground in the running game. If you give up any penetration, that ball is going to bounce backside to where the entire flow of the defense is coming from, and you're not going to get anything done. So for this offense to have that success and for him to have that dominance, he better have that offensive line healthy in front of him.
Two things you point out to me I thought were just a great observation. From an offensive line standpoint, everyone's watching the waiver wire. You pointed out, hey, Chris, it's easier to pick up a guy like you, for fourth or fifth wide receiver.
Or a veteran with 400 or 500 catches. That's a guy you can bring in.
Right. Now, as far as big people, like, people are not letting go of offensive linemen. If you
not,
look,
not quality offensive linemen.
Right. So if you look at losing a center as a former offensive lineman, he's talking about the impact it has already on the offensive line. Now, there's only a few great centers in football. Now, the Cowboys have the best center, and losing him and his ability to be able to constantly be able to shore up the middle, because Tyron, we saw, you're saying that the losing the center is going to have the same effect is when they lost Tyron Smith, their left tackle.
And the one thing about when they didn't with that left tackle, they didn't even do anything to adjust the schemes to help him out. But when you're talking about the middle of the offense and the middle of the pocket, any pressure in the A and B gap is going to get a quarterback off of a spot to where he's not being able to plant his feet, throw the ball accurately. Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden it's getting sailed across the middle. And then when you start doing that and leaning on the passing game, who's their number one downfield true
threat? That's been the issue.
That's the big issue.
They don't have it right now.
They don't have it. And now all of a sudden you're going to go to Cole Beasley, which now they're going to bracket coverage. They're going to completely take him out of the game. So who are you really going to go to downfield? And that's where this wide receiver by committee is going to falter in the long run for their season.
I think a lot of people thought they would spend either their first round pick or at least their second round pick on a wide receiver. They waited until the third round with Michael Gallup. In the second round, instead, they take another offensive lineman. They're going to have a rookie starting offensive lineman.
And he struggled during the preseason,
yes,
Connor
Williams. And he was inside. He wasn't even at the tackle position when he played at A&M.
That's my question, though. How vital as a rookie offensive lineman is a veteran center?
It is vital for them because, like I said, the communication and the confidence, and more than anything, your quarterback better be comfortable getting under center, knowing that you're making all the calls and have him protected. Because if you don't feel that, now all of a sudden you have a Fargo quarterback who's messing around, running around till somebody gets open, and that does not help your O-line.
So now if I just walked into this conversation and I heard everything you say, I'd say, wow, Dak Prescott's going to have a tough year. If they are going to play so much emphasis on the running game and make Zeke do so much, at some point he's not going to be able to, and then you look at Dak Prescott and say, well, how is he going to handle an offensive line that's beat up and the lack of a basically a depleted wide receiver core? How do you game plan what he's going to do this
year?
Well,
then the next thing that you do is if you can't get a solid run game going, you have to bring Dak Prescott into the element as a runner as well. That's something that they did his rookie year, making him roll out, run bootlegs, run nakeds,
RPO.
Run a little RPO, zone reads. Make sure that you keep that backside defensive end honest, because if all of a sudden he starts crashing down and veering inside, then he can keep the ball and take it outside. If he's going to stay and be disciplined, it just opens up the gaps on the inside for Ezekiel to run.
If you want to look at a model, look at a younger Russell Wilson with a depleted offensive line in Seattle.
Great example.
That wasn't as good as the line that Dallas had, but what they required from Russell early. Now, Doug Baldwin, hey, listen, don't call me and everything. I'm not trying to rip you. At that time, they were not an established group of wide receivers. So if we watch Russell, what he had to do early, that's what we should be expecting from Dak in year number three.
The Cowboys, over the last 2 years, with and without Zeke, it's 19-6 with him, 3-3 without him. If we want to just throw out, by the way, the Week 17 game when they were all playing their backups.
Yeah.
In that same stretch, they're 19-7, same record, when Tyron Smith, Zach Martin, and Travis Frederick all play.
Yeah.
And 3-3 when any one of them is missing. So we talked about the difference between with Zeke and without Zeke. Record-wise, it's the exact same
thing
with the three offensive linemen or without just one of them.
Yeah, and Jenna, as you and I talked about, they don't have a star wide receiver, but they do have a guy on that defense in Jalen Smith, who we believe is going to be a superstar. We believe their defense will be in the top 10. So Zeke running the ball and that defense, that's how Dallas gets in the playoffs.
And at the end of this season, we'll be able to judge if they should have taken Calvin Ridley with that pick or they were smart by taking Leighton Vander Esch.
The first round pick this year. Absolutely right.
All right, we've got to take a break. David, thanks so much for hanging out
pleasure.
With us today.
My pleasure.
Great job. Great to
coming
see you,
up.
See you,
man.
Happy football.
Thank you. Happy football.
Set up for
here
the next decade with Teddy Bridgewater. Football is about to start.
Hey,
next up, football.
Jalen Ramsey happened to be on the field with you. Do you think you might run into
him? We are going after him.
Moving on to the recently traded Teddy Bridgewater.
Oh, we're going
to
start repeating other people's statements.
No, we're good.
Okay.
No,
we're
you're going to repeat mine because I don't know what I'm saying. You
from
have to interpret
the Jets to the Saints, from the projected backup to the actual backup, he will sit and learn behind Drew Brees this year. That's not really up for debate. He was on the sidelines for his new team last night. Despite being the Saints' obvious number two, Bridgewater says he's excited to be in New Orleans.
I don't mind waiting. I get to learn from one of the best players to ever play this game. Get to be in a room with a great group of guys. I get to learn from Coach Payton also, so I look forward to that.
CeCe, if there are two people that you want to teach a quarterback and let him learn, I guess Drew Brees and Sean Payton, an offensive-minded coach and a guy like so prolific as Drew Brees, how much better can Teddy Bridgewater get sitting behind and watching those two guys?
I just think the combination, what Teddy's been able to do as far as resurrecting his career, the type of work that he put into horrific injury. Talking to the training staff there in Minnesota, when this initially happened, I remember the day, and the players on the Vikings, they were crying. They were, because it was such a shock to see what happened to him. I mean, he almost lost the use of his leg.
Oh, he almost lost his leg.
Yeah, like and in trying to save his leg, he was end up able to save his career. So it's a tremendous story. Even the doctor who did the operation is astonished of where Teddy is right now. So I can just put that out there. He's a great guy. In the trade to, I couldn't think of a better place. And not necessarily for a rookie quarterback, for a guy who has had some experience, has led his team to the playoff, has played in some, has some tough stuff happen on and off the field. I think it's great because I don't think there's a better play caller than Sean Payton, and I don't think there's a better example of a leader, someone who will mentor someone and someone who can teach what they're doing. Because Drew Brees, he made his game. He was a great passer in college and everything, but his overall arm strength, his commitment, Jenna, to fitness and taking care of his body, that's why he's been so consistent and playing at an advanced age. Let's not forget, Nick, you don't want to talk, Drew Brees around week six, five or six, he's going to break the all-time passing
oh,
record.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, most yards in NFL history.
I mean, who wouldn't want to sit under that? Teddy Bridgewater at a young 25, I think it's the best spot for him in the NFL.
All right, so you said this morning that Teddy woke up this morning or yesterday morning as happy as he's been in years.
Yes.
As far as basically since the knee injury, knowing where his career and life could have gone, and then not having a lot of interest in free agency, signing with the Jets, knowing the Jets are going to draft a quarterback, and knowing that your best-case scenario is placeholder starter, but they also signed Josh McCown, so now you're just fighting
with for... With $10 million guaranteed.
Right, and you got $500,000 guaranteed, so he knows where his spot on that hierarchy is, so that he is in a good place mentally and a good place to develop. Let me ask you this, though. We don't expect Teddy to play this year. The Saints hope desperately he doesn't play this year because that means something happened to Drew Brees.
Yeah, based on Drew Brees' track record, he doesn't miss time. So, no, we don't expect him to play.
So what concern do you have that Teddy, at a minimum, is going to go 3 years without NFL regular season game action?
The reason why is because Drew Brees at 40 years old, he's not taking all the reps at practice. And Sean Payton, they put the emphasis on trading for Teddy. So it's their job to be able to get the quarterback ready. So they will go through all different – Teddy's got game experience. So the one thing we worry about rookies, well, how much can you create for game experience? They need game experience. Teddy's already got game experience. Teddy just needs rep. He improved drastically, Nick, from where he was last season, because he was not actually better than Case at the end of the season. And he was still a little worried about people around his legs. This year in Jets training camp, he's been lights out. So he's going to continue to improve. They will do the necessary work that he doesn't necessarily need the game experience like younger players do.
So for Teddy, is it a combination of because he has the game experience, but also because of the position where you're not going to hit him in practice anyway, that practice at the quarterback position, because I would imagine if he played any other position, I don't care what they're doing in practice, you need to play in games. You can't go 3 years without playing in a game at any other position, and then all of a sudden you're going to be an NFL caliber starter. You think that's possible for him? Because
I mean, we saw Aaron Rodgers do it without the experience that Teddy has. I know it's not going to be 3 years. It might be 3 years from the horrific injury.
Right.
But just look how far he's come. I believe they're going to sign him to a contract extension. And I know Sean Payton well enough that they're going to put the type of work in on the practice field because the simulated, the deep across the middle, the deep comebacks, throwing the ball across the field, the audible system, learning that you can do all that in practice. So practice is important. But that overall game experience that Teddy already has, he doesn't need as much.
Even though Teddy was not a great athlete, doesn't have the strongest arm, and it doesn't profile out as the prototypical size, the reason most people thought he would be a first-round pick, ended up being the end of the first round out of Louisville, was because he is an all-time accurate college quarterback. He is now learning from Drew Brees, who holds the all-time single-season NFL accuracy record. Maybe the single biggest strength of Drew Brees' game is the precision passing. So what is already his strength, he's learning from someone who's actually better at it than he is.
Quick question before we go to break. The two things people were concerned with Teddy Bridgewater. One, how is he going to be able to come back in after missing so much time, years of football? And then two, how much has he recovered from that injury? Did you see anything in the preseason that lets you believe he's not 100%?
He was far more comfortable. You could see in the rush, they ran a couple bootlegs for the Jets. You saw him getting outside the pocket. He also had his right guard got beat. He had a guy right in his face. You could see him get away and still keep his eyes down the field and throw the ball. I felt like Teddy was a lot better, Nick, than the last time we saw him.
He also had a play where a guy rolled up on his left leg, the leg that was injured. I saw it happen. I gasped when it happened. He hopped right up. And it also should be noted, he didn't get hurt getting hit. He got hurt just dropping back. So yeah. I'm not sure exactly how transferable that is, but it's not a situation where he's nervous about, oh, that hit happening again. His was a freak incident on a typical drop back. And so you saw some of the anxiety last year in his little bit of action. I wasn't seeing it this
And I
season.
Think that he felt the same way. He just didn't express it that Andrew Luck expressed. Wow. Glad I got that over with, because anytime you're injured, to get that first hit out of the way, that's big.
We are very happy for Teddy Bridgewater. All right, coming up, is Jim Harbaugh on the hot seat entering year four? CeCe's so happy, loves
CeCe
him.
CeCe and all his
all
friends,
the work he's
his
doing.
Hundreds and hundreds of friends.
Next,
oh, we love Harbaugh. Man, Ohio State, we'll pay a salary. Keep him there.
Welcome back to First Things First. We are going viral. Yesterday, Cleveland defeated the Twins 5-3, further increasing their lead in the division. But it wasn't a great day for everyone in attendance. Hey, check this out.
And the 2-2 is yanked left field, but foul. He was out in front of it. And, oh, man, that guy took it right off the noggin. He thought his girlfriend in front of him, he said, I thought you had it. She missed, and how many lumps you want with your coffee?
Saying, honey, it was coming too fast. I had to duck. Yeah, there you go.
And he ends up giving her the ball anyway. I'm going to go get some ice.
Yeah, he needs some ice.
That's all right.
All right, so that guy was mad at that lady. The announcer said his girlfriend. I don't know why they're assigning that. They just happen to be. I mean, maybe they're not sitting next to each other. They don't. He didn't seem to like her very much.
She didn't have the natural girlfriend reaction.
No, she had the oh my god, and he was angry. Hey man, you can't rely on a random civilian to catch a line drive.
I mean, you're up the left field line. The chance of a line drive getting to you, if the ball gets there, it's going to be pretty hot when it arrives.
Yeah.
But he gave her the ball.
Well, very after nice. He was.
He don't know what he was doing. He's in the concussion protocol. He's in the tent. I'm talking about he gave her the ball. He don't know what he was doing. He's sitting somewhere like looking like Brum right now. Yesterday his head was that size. Today it's like Brumley's head. Boom.
Brumley, big our heralded head. Producer.
Yeah.
We love you.
That dude got
you guys,
a big,
he's
got a big brain,
gets mentioned
too.
On the show a lot. Imagine a less athletic Ryan Nassib.
A lot of people know who that is.
Mm-hmm. Hard Knocks. Carl Nassib, pardon me.
Carl Nassib. And they
Ryan
made fun
Nassib
of his first name.
Syracuse player.
Also
he's
Ryan.
He's doing Brumley's the Jalen name. Ramsey thing. The facts don't matter.
Time. Oh, it's erroneous. Time for stories to start your morning. The Alabama Crimson Tide are the betting favorites to win the national title this season. And how about this? At plus 175, they've got the best odds to win the title since the 2005 USC Trojans. CC is Alabama really that much better than everyone else?
Alabama is. They have more depth than anyone. They have two quality college football starting quarterbacks. They have the best coach in college football, and they got an easy schedule. That's part of the reason why they can get to the SEC or get to the Final Four playoff. That's why their odds are the plus 175.
I mean, they were able to get to the playoff last year without even playing in their own
conference championship. I think they've won two national championships without being SEC champs.
And so, so they have that added benefit as well, that if there's if it's a five-team race and one of the bubble teams is Bama, they're probably going to get in.
Respect.
Sorry, Ohio State, as happened last year. I don't know that I think they are much better than Georgia. Like, I think Georgia it can look eye-to-eye with them this year like they could last year in the title game. But, listen, betting against Bama at this point is a fool's errand. So I understand why they're such heavy favorites.
Yeah, the teams Clemson, Georgia, and Ohio State teams, like, how good can their quarterbacks play against Bama? That will determine the national championship.
Yep.
All right, moving on to the NFL now. Last night, A.J. McCarron started the Bills' final preseason game. He went 13 of 34, two interceptions, and was sacked five times. As my buddy Nick likes to say,
that ain't great.
All right, Nick, A.J. McCarron, go.
I mean, listen, what do you expect? This is, if you'd have told me, hey, A.J. McCarron's going to play four quarters of NFL football, I don't care if it's week four of the preseason, regular season, postseason, ain't going to be the postseason. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. Like, this is about what you're going to see. And this is why I think the Bills right now are the favorite to have the number one overall pick next year. I think they
absolutely have
the worst quarterback situation in the NFL by a wide margin. They have three bad options. Nate Peterman is their best option. And I can't believe I'm saying that.
No, he's looked a lot better. We criticized Peter Berger, Peterman, whatever his mom called us and said, we're going to get his name right and everything. But he has improved. He is their best option. I do believe they're the worst team in football. But you are Your decisions. That's what you are. What about Tyrod Taylor? Got him to the playoffs last year. They have dropped off the map. You don't have to worry about playoff aspirations.
And keep in mind, they traded away their left tackle, trying to move up in the draft. So, and LeSean McCoy is their best player. I mean, he... That commissioner's exempt list at some point could be coming for him. We don't know what his legal situation is. None of this is good for Buffalo.
Big drop-off for the Buffalo Bills. On to the Seahawks now. Starting linebacker K.J. Wright is expected to be out at least 2 weeks, opening the door for rookie Shaquem Griffin to start in his place. And what a feel-good story playing out for us in Seattle. Griffin's left hand was amputated when he was 4 years old because of amniotic band syndrome. Now he may be starting in the NFL. CC, what does this mean for the Seahawks?
Well, Jen, I know you love this story. Great personal interest story. And, Nick, I think that you said this early. Chris, I'm excited about the story, but when it moves from being just a news story to we're talking about football and talking about his talent, that's what I'm looking forward to, and that's what we're doing. He has proven himself. His speed that he had in the 40 at the NFL Combine has transferred over. He's the leading tackler for Seattle's defense. And his skill set is what they look for. He's exactly like K.J. Wright is. Guy who can run. Guy's a good tackler in space. So looking forward to see him play week number one.
There are going to be guys from his round of the draft who get cut. There are going to be cut before the season starts. Cut today or tomorrow. I would imagine when we look at all the starters from week one, he'll be one of three or four from his spot in the draft. Like, so this is now an injury happened. He was next man up and he's ready. Yeah. And those are big shoes to fill. K.J. Wright is their second best linebacker, but he's only second best because Bobby Wagner is so good. Like, that's a good player he's got to fill in for. I think his skill set allows him to do so.
And for the rookie defenders, him, Mika Fitzpatrick down in Miami, they've been more of the most impressive that we've seen for rookie players in their first preseason.
Absolutely.
All right, some news out of New England now. The Patriots added $1 million in bonuses and $3.3 million in incentives to Rob Gronkowski's contract, raising his max value to $13 million. The incentives are based on playing time, catches, and receiving yards. CeCe, what does it tell you that the Patriots are willing to bend and give Gronk more money?
The Patriots trying to win. They got the Patriot way, but, yeah, we need to keep a couple of these guys happy. We can't just play with anybody out there. We can't just put anybody out there. And I'm glad to see their top players in Brady and in Gronk, they've earned it. I mean, it's a dangerous game. Gronk is back. Like, when Gronk says that I might not want to, it's not because I don't think I'm good at this game. It's because how much more of a pounding can his body take? Like, when he becomes an old man, he's like, listen, I like to be able to save a little something. They should be compensated. Gronk, he plays at a level that we've only seen a couple tight ends play at. Tom Brady, what he has done and his ability to give them a hometown discount for not one season, not two seasons.
Helped him.
It's helped them so much that, of course, they should be doing this. I don't want to hear that, oh, we got the company, oh, we don't do this. When you have special people, you make special concessions for them.
And people should, so here's how the incentives break down. $1 million, he has a $62,500 per game roster bonus. That times 16 gets you your $1 million. So if he plays all 16 games, there's that million. And then he can get $1.1 million for any of these next four, but he only needs to get three. He can only get three of them. 70 catches, 80% playing time, 9 or more touchdowns, or 1,085 yards. Why are those noteworthy? Last year he had 1,084 yards. So they ticked that up one.
Yes.
Essentially, if he plays in at least 13 games, he's going to reach all those incentives and he'll get almost the entire roster bonus. This is if you play the full season, we're giving an extra $4 million, and if you get hurt early, you're not getting the extra money. Now, one note for – go ahead, C.
And it also speaks to, no, we're not giving you a long-term contract. We're going to pay you for what you think you're worth right now. And they've done this the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. So if Gronk continues to say he might not play, I don't think they'll sign him to a long-term contract. I think they'll keep doing things a lot like this until he decides to either trade Gronk or Gronk decides he don't want to play.
And it should be noted, Brady is – knowingly taking an undervalued deal because he wants to win. He knows his legacy's based on winning.
And he already has
and
money.
And he's got so much money in his wife. Go ahead.
Gronk ain't about that.
No. Gronk is still paying for a decision he made that, by the way, if I were representing him, I would have cautioned him against. He was a second-round draft pick. So he was on a four-year, $4.4 million deal. He was very good his first 2 years. So with 2 years left on a deal, paying him just $1 million a year, the Pats went to him. Mm-hmm. Hey, Rob.
Hey.
How about 6 years?
Yeah.
$54 million. And that sounds amazing. 6 years, $54 million, I'm making $1 million. Well, he's still paying for that. Because they had him locked mm-hmm. in, and they got him so under market value if he continued that performance.
Just like they signed one of their offensive linemen. To
just Shaq Mason.
Yeah, 5 years,
week.
$50 million. People are like, whoa, he got $50 million. Hey, there's some little tricky stuff
right,
there.
They can get out of it at any time after 2 years, like they could with Gronk. And if they keep him on the roster, it means he's outperformed it. So the benefit of signing those deals early before you hit free agency is you get security. Gronk had injury issues. He got a big bonus up front. Mm-hmm. That's great. The downside is if you don't get hurt and you keep producing, it's more soup, please. It's like you go then like maybe you'll get it, maybe you won't. Okay, we'll give you more money, but only if you stay healthy. Like Gronk could legitimately be making double what he makes. Double. And now instead of getting an actual salary raise, he's getting, if you stay healthy, we'll give you more money, which I get why the Pats are doing it, but he's still paying for a decision he
made.
How
many more years can Gronk put up those kind of numbers?
Oh, I mean, if he's healthy, I think he can do this for another 4 or 5 years.
Well, this is the thing. We don't know the state where his body is.
Yeah.
All right? And
he wears armor all up.
I mean, look at him.
Yeah.
I mean, Gronk is built for football, but only so much football. Even the best of them, the biggest of them, eventually they have their day. I believe Gronk can play another 3 years. I don't know if he can play 3 years in New England.
And his body almost works against him because he's so big. The way guys have to hit him to bring him down, like the different places on his body, especially now that you can't hit guys high. I mean, they got to hit him low. They got to hit him in the legs. When they did hit him high in the playoff game, got a concussion. Like, I mean, he plays a punishing position in a punishing manner.
And the reason why he was drafted in the second round, he had problems in Arizona. Bad back. He was marked down. So he was a medical risk coming into the league.
Right. All right. Let's move on. To all the reasons we'll all be home Saturday night. There's really just one big one. Huge college football game this weekend. Michigan heading to South Bend to take on Notre Dame. Who won't be watching that? Jim Harbaugh enters year four as Michigan's $9 million head coach. Cece, how much pressure is on Harbaugh this season?
Well, there's a certain amount of pressure because what we've seen in the great coaches in college, when they decide to make the transition, and typically no matter where they go, in the first 1-2 years in college, you can get the program turned around. The big programs we've all seen turned around within 3 years. If you look at Nick Saban, what he did, look at Urban, what he did, forget about Florida, Ohio State. The big programs get turned around quick. He's got the program turned around. He just can't coach quarterbacks, obviously, because he's got a bunch of kids that he has gone through, guys who had high marks in high school, and they came there. And also, he's had a bunch of guys who have transferred that he has not been able to get the productivity from the quarterback. Their defense has been nationally ranked a couple years. It's the best part of their team. Their quarterback struggle has prevented them from being able to perform in the big games. Also, your two rivals, Michigan State and Ohio State, you can't only win one game in 3 years against those teams. So he's 1-5 against the two biggest rivals.
All right, so I think Harbaugh is better than his record has suggested. He takes over 5-7 team. His first year he goes 10-3. That loss to Michigan State is after a bad snap on a punt. His second year, they are, I believe, a faulty spot away from beating Ohio State and being in the college football playoff. Last year was by Michigan standards, a disastrous year. You can't go 8-5, and they lost their final three games of the year, which is why this game becomes critically important. It's basically a pick 'em at Notre Dame. If people glance at Michigan's schedule, what you're going to see is middle of October to early November. How about home for number 4 Wisconsin, at number 11 Michigan State, home for Penn State. Those are three games in a row. And then a couple weeks later, how about you go to the horseshoe to play Ohio State? They have a brutal last 6 weeks of the year. You can't start off 0-1. Like, you just can't. So for Michigan's, I mean, they could because Notre Dame's good. It's on the road. It's a pick 'em. But if they are going to have a chance at getting 10 wins, because 10 wins his first year was not nearly as impressive as 10 wins would be this year with this schedule. And as far as the quality of the Big Ten with Penn State being back, with Wisconsin having arguably the best team Wisconsin's had in a decade. Like, this is a tough year in that conference. So you can't lose your rivalry game against a non-conference opponent in Notre Dame. I'm curious to see their quarterback. You said he hasn't been able to coach quarterbacks at Michigan. He's got the best quarterback he's ever had. The transfer from
Ole
Miss.
He's got new coaches, a new strength coach this year, an offensive line coach this year, and you're still shaking your head.
They've been through a couple of strength coaches. They changed. They were with Adidas. Then they went to Brand Jordan. They've changed everything but that guy. All right? Like, they think Harbaugh was going to answer all the things. Harbaugh has been a disappointment in college football. Now, Nick might think it's cute. The guy shows up in khakis at a kid's house at midnight. Cute. Like, I just, Michigan should have a good quarterback with Jim Harbaugh as the coach.
That has been a failure by him. I think they have a good quarterback this year. I also think he's Urban, Saban, in no order. Urban, Saban, Dabo, Chris Peterson. Those are, to me, James Franklin maybe as well, your five
Harbaugh
best coaches. Well, that's what I was going to say.
We shouldn't even be talking about him, if you ask me. Because what has he done to prove it? And nothing. We're basing it on, man, he was a good NFL coach. And we give him credit for that. But he has not been a great coach since he's been at Michigan. That just happens to be the fact. Even if I had gone to another school, I wouldn't be saying, you know something, I think Harbaugh's done great in his 3 years at Michigan. No, he hadn't.
What I'm basing it off of, he's won everywhere he's ever been. Stanford now is a power program. It wasn't when he got there. He beat USC and that Pete Carroll dynasty
at
Stanford.
How many years did it take him, though?
What?
How many years did it take him to get Stanford turned around?
What, 3 years?
Past that time.
Okay, but he got Michigan was a bad spot away from being in the playoff in year two after being a disastrous situation under Brady Oak. He got them turned around in 2 years. Last year was a down year. So the best coaches don't have him. I get it. He's not Urban. He's not Saban.
Okay, well, let's say that then.
There's five coaches that are clearly superior to him. But you can't say anyone other than that list of the truly elite five guys that are clearly better than him.
I do know some people at Michigan. I do know some people on the board of trustees, and they are not happy with the overall performance of Jim Harbaugh with his football team and some other stuff that's happened as far as recruiting, shenanigans, things like that.
They should be careful what they wish for.
Quickly, what would you consider a good season for this Michigan team this year? 10 wins and
10
what?
Wins.
A win
what
over
about, no,
one
no,
of the rivals?
No, 10 wins is not good enough. You got to win your conference. Would you like to say Jim Harbaugh, after 4 years at Michigan, you know what he hasn't won? He hadn't won the Big Ten. He could win 10 games, but if he does not win the Big Ten, it will be a failure. Those are the normal standard for Michigan men. He's not a Michigan man, so he don't know that, but that's the normal standard that they have.
All right. You got all that?
That's a tough standard when the best team in the country might
They've
be
They've only been
State.
Playing football for great football for 130 years.
I understand. I get it. I understand.
Now, because your guy's the coach, let's drop the standard.
Got to take a break. Coming up, how high is Sam Darnold's ceiling in year one? Back here, First Things First, and we welcome in former Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott to the show.
Good to
what
see
up?
You.
I'm with
hey,
the varsity this time.
Yeah, we're on vacation.
Oh, yeah, good to see you.
Great
Thank you,
to
Bart.
Have you here. We got a lot to discuss as we get ready to start the regular season here. Todd Bowles says he hasn't made his decision yet about who will start at quarterback week one, but all indications are it'll be Sam Darnold as your week one starter for the Jets. Here's why we think that. He didn't play in the final preseason game. He was drafted third overall, and it was leaked that he would be the week one starter. That's why we think all of those things. Bart, what will be Darnold's
leaks?
What will be Darnold's biggest challenge as a rookie starter?
Well,
what's
rookie,
he going to be facing?
Well, rookie, if he is the opening day starter, the biggest challenge is going to be playing three games in 11 days. And you know that he's going against different types of defense. He's going from a 4-3 defense to a 3-4. I would be concerned with the short week going into Cleveland, you know, because you have to have the same game plan and you really can't alter much. That's why I believe they should go with McCown, just to get them past this rough patch. He's a veteran. He knows what to do with the football. You can put multiple game plans in. You can throw the entire playbook on him. I think it'd be a little bit too much to rush the kid too fast.
Well, let me ask you this, though. What do you think's tougher, having to deal with the three games in 11 days, or if you wait until after that third game, then you have a week and a half before the next game, put him in then. Then his first two games of his career are Jacksonville and Denver. The two of the better defenses we probably think in the AFC. How much do you weigh the timing of the games versus the strength of the opponent?
Well, you can learn from the sideline, adjusting to the speed, learning what a regular season preparation week is all about, learning how to break down an opponent, and then you're going to have some information on the opponent because mm-hmm. now you've seen what they've done defensively, their schemes, and you get to speed up. And then you're coming off a short week on Thursday, but you get like a mini bye, mm-hmm. so it gives you an extra day of preparation to allow him to get a package in that's quick, fast. And you saw that they took care of him during the preseason. When they had him in empty sets, you know what that is. It tells you the story, the answers to the test mm-hmm. before the test, right? Because if the guy goes with you, you know man-to-man, you know zone, you know what to go exactly with the football. So Bates did a good job of that. I think if you give him that extra week of preparation time to adjust, I think he'll be fine.
Now, Nick said earlier he thought, because he knew the schedule, he masters the schedule, he looks at all the game. So he suggested that the McCowan should start, and then he should take over week number three. But
Week
number four. If you think he should take over week number four, obviously you've seen something. What are the attributes that you think the Jets got it right as that selection? Because I think that sticks out in your comments to me. Okay, he might not start, but this dude will be ready week number four.
Well, he can digest a lot of information. I think he's changed, improved his mechanics. He's holding on to the football with two hands, and he's not as loose with the football as he was in college. And now I think he has some weapons. A lot of people don't give the Jets credit. I don't think they have a true number one, but they have a bunch of, 1As. And when you have a bunch of 1As, much like Seattle used to do back in the day with Carson Baldwin, then you get guys open because you're going against the third, you're attacking the third and fourth, best corner on the opposing team's roster. I don't like the fact that Beecham's been injured, and their offensive line. So I don't want to throw him in week one and then he's getting beaten, get hit in the back of the head.
But let's for a moment, let's just assume he is going to play week one. Because even if you think and I think that maybe you wait until that three games in 11 days is gone, every indication has been they are going to start him week one.
Yeah. I talked to the team a couple days ago.
Yeah, I heard, man.
You
ain't hit me up, though, man. I'm using my hood.
I was trying to get in. I had a couple guys I had barbecued on TV before. I was trying to get out of there safe. I'm saying it wasn't one of those kind of meetings. So the indication for me, and even talking to Saint, he didn't tell me that he was going to start. But he told me things that I would be shocked if he doesn't start, Nick.
Listen, I look at other rookie quarterbacks' recent history who've started week one and assuming health, mm-hmm. what we can expect from them for the year. And that is usually, if it's a good year, one interception a game, like around 15 interceptions for the year, a little bit less. A little more than one touchdown a game. A completion percentage around 60%. And something you alluded to, though, that can be the X factor in all of this is, how many times are you going to get hit? Like, are you going to have as it was put yesterday for what happened to David Carr, which is the extreme, football knocked out
of him. He should have filed charges.
Right. I mean, and 76 sacks his rookie season, and it never was the same from that. Like, that is, to me, I believe in Sam Darnold's ability as a pro, even if I don't think he's going to be a superstar. I think he's going to be a steady, decade-long starter.
Yeah.
But I do have serious concerns about the Jets' offensive line, even prior to the Beecham injury. So how much of that is a concern for you if he is the week one starter?
Well, I did start, a season twice and went to the AFC Championship with two rookie quarterbacks. But what we had a tremendous defense and we had a tremendous running game and arguably the best offensive line. Right, now, arguably the best offensive line in the game. What they're going to have to do to protect him, they're going to have to put him on the move. They're going to have to give him boots, waggles, throwbacks. And they're going to have to run the ball and win on first down so that you can get that play action so that you're not bringing that eighth man into the box and trying to blitz him. Because they're going to try and blitz him and test him. He's going to have to know where his hot reads is. And you're going to have to make it simple for him. So you give him half the field to read so that he can play fast, take shots. When you take shots, it's two things that can happen. And most of them are for the offense. Either you're going to get illegal contact or you're going to get pass interference. It's rarely intercepted when you take shots one-on-one.
Bart, of all the quarterbacks drafted this year, most said that Sam Darnold was the most NFL-ready, that if you're going to throw one of them
I thought Rosen.
Did you really think it was going to be Rosen over Sam Darnold?
Yeah, he had a bad attitude, but, he was a guy that I felt like was most ready in the pocket, most polished. When you think about Darnold, he didn't have a great season. I think that Rosen made all the NFL throws.
How much did his last season, the turnovers, concern you?
It concerns me a lot, but that just shows me that, you know, maybe he was reading the press clippings, he was trying to win the Heisman and trying to do too much. And a lot of times when you're the best player on your team in college, you're trying to fit the ball into tight spots instead of trying to get the ball in your playmaker's hands and let them do the work.
And I do believe that the Jets and their playmakers, you've talked about him, Jermaine Kearse in Seattle, what they did. He's with the Jets. He'll probably be their number two receiver.
Yeah.
Robbie Anderson will be their number one receiver. And Darnold's ability to throw the ball deep, Robbie Anderson's ability to be
Flyers
able to make,
abuse, catch radius.
Make the big play. And I'm spending some time with this kid. I'm expecting this kid to make some tremendous leaps. I know there's some bad information out on him. He had an incident this offseason. But the Jets, Todd Bowles, they really believe in him. And you have to be able to make some of those. You talking about confidence?
No misdemeanors or felonies in the offseason. That's a great day for Robbie Anderson. That's great.
So I do have some faith that he's going to be the number one receiver for the Jets.
Even if it is Sam Darnold, it is still three games in 11 days, so he's got his work cut out for him. Bart, stick around. Coming up, Jalen Ramsey just keeps on yapping. But will it cost him in the long run next to First Things First? Back here with Bart Scott, we are talking Jalen Ramsey. The Jaguars cornerback is carving out quite a little niche for himself with opinions on other teams, on other players, about other game plans. Earlier this offseason, he took aim at half the quarterbacks in the league in a GQ article. This time, Gronk was the target in a piece on ESPN.com. Jalen said, "I don't think Gronk's good." Let me say, I don't think Gronk is as great as people think he is. Anytime Gronk has been matched up with a corner, he's had a very bad game, and that corner has had a very good game. All right, Bart, in so doing, has Ramsey put a target on his back with all these comments?
Yeah, like I said, if you're a wolf, you know, you're selling wolf tickets, you got to be a wolf. And I think Jalen Ramsey is a wolf. He's a young wolf, and I think he's trying
to make a wolf ticket.
Gotcha.
You're selling wolf tickets. If you ain't a wolf, don't sell wolf tickets. But I tell you what, you know, he's going against Gronk. You know, and it's a good matchup for him. He's getting Gronk later in his career, post, like, injuries, you know. But I tell you what, he reminds me of a young young...
I used to talk some trash, but not that much.
Yeah, you talk a lot of trash. Chris McAllister. He reminds me of a young Chris McAllister. He's a big physical receiver. Reminds me of a guy I played with, 6'2". And right now, yo, he's self-promoting right now. And we know the squeaky oil gets the wheel. He's setting himself up. If he's able to back this stuff up, it's going to be a lot of money for him.
Well, this is, as a fan, I love it.
Yeah.
As a consumer of football, I wouldn't like it if I'll use one of your famous moments. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't like it if every time a guy at the end of a playoff game is interviewed, he's yelling, right? Mm-hmm. But because there was, but I'm glad somebody did it.
Yeah,
your interview was great. Richard Sherman's interview with Aaron Andrews, he got criticized for it. That was great. I like the diversity of personalities.
Yeah,
and so if every corner in the league was out here doing this, I wouldn't love it. I'm glad somebody is. I'm also glad it's the guy who is not only arguably the best corner in the league, but physically one of the most imposing. And we have seen him in a game get in a guy such as A.J. Green, who is a mild-mannered, quiet guy. Got in his head so much, A.J. got kicked out of the game. Now, is he making his job harder? Certainly. Is he putting a target on his back either physically and definitely from my friend Jenna Wolf and others who, if Gronk comes out and has a big game, they are going to barbecue this guy. But he seems to be doing it eyes wide open. And listen, man, I like trash talking sports. I like it. I think it adds some flavor to it. I got no issue with it whatsoever.
Yeah, but you don't have to play. You don't have to realize that offensive linemen are going to be taking unnecessary shots at Jalen, and I don't want it for Jalen. So people sitting there cheering them, they don't realize what are the ramifications from throwing this boulder in the ocean. You got a couple little sprinkles, but Jalen, it's going to be guys actually going out of their way the football field to come after him. Man, this game is difficult. Man, that is unnecessary because there are games where you're going to wake up and you're not going to feel great. You're not going to have that swag. You got to be able to concentrate and to be able to grind it out. So I understand, as a marquee player, there are players coming after you every week, but you don't need to put. And I think he's going to make a ton of money. I think he's got a brand that's really, really special without that. Because he could have talked trash, but not said Amendola, Edelman. I don't know. Which one's in Miami now?
But I'll tell you what. We respect when you name names, right?
Who's he made, we?
other players?
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, you're going to name names, it's all good because you got to back it up. You got Tariq Hill, you got Antonio Brown. If you can shut down this list, it's going to be marquee money for you in the offseason.
Because you were a bit of a talker, and Chris, Chris said guys are going to come after you.
Can't wait. I heard that all for the rest of my career.
No, but it's different in the trash talking that we're doing. Bart going to talk trash. We're going to talk trash in the game, but Bart is not going to set me up and say, you know something? I'm ready for Minnesota. You know something? When they go Twins, they run this shallow cross. Chris Carter is over it. He's not going to say that.
I had a couple of those. But, me and Ocho went at it. Me and Hines Ward. I was trying to take Hines Ward out. You know, Thompson wouldn't.
Oh, yeah. That was
real talk. But I tell you what, he's going to get his opportunity to prove it. And I tell you what, I'm excited. Because you know what? He got backup. That's the whole thing. He's not saying this without Calais Campbell, Malik Jackson. He got backup.
I like their defense. I like Bart Scott as a player. I'm just talking about how you can do this for a long time.
Yeah.
We just have not seen players who are able to talk like that and be able to play. He has Hall of Fame ability. I just want him to have a Hall of Fame career. Now, if he wasn't in Jacksonville, and I told you guys, when you do these big interviews, when you get GQ or something, you said he popped off because he's trying to get some more eyeballs on him. But also, I remember Jalen's rookie year. I think they were losing a game, and he was on the sideline crying.
Yeah.
All right? So I also know one dude who talks trash, and just less than a year and a half ago, you was on the NFL sideline crying. So the game hadn't gotten that easy.
I tell you
that
what,
quick.
Week one's going to be excited because he basically called Eli Manning Odell's caddy.
Yeah,
so we're going to see the $95 million, see if he got his quarterback
and
back.
And he didn't even tell Odell congratulations. He said it's me and you week number one.
Exactly. And week two is
back
Gronk.
Back man and Joker.
Week two is Gronk.
But I tell you what, they'll design some stuff. And he may be on Gronk, but he's not going to be on Gronk all the time. But they'll design some stuff to come out. Because we know one thing about Tom Brady. He'll come after you. I forget that player from Pittsburgh.
It was Anthony Smith.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my
buddy.
Man.
That's one of my good friends from Syracuse. Anthony.
We heard from him since.
No, he ran him out the league. If people don't know, it was
we can't get him on the show.
It was the undefeated 07 Pats. Anthony Smith, my pal, said we're going to shut Brady down.
Oh,
they
man.
Ran a flea flicker.
Was he on the Giants?
No, he was on the Steelers. Anthony Smith was on the Steelers. Said, and they ran a flea flicker right at him. Touchdown, and Brady ran all the way the length of the field and got in his face. Yeah, that did happen.
I would have body slammed Brady too if you'd have did that. Like you can't come up run up here. You ain't no wolf. You ain't no wolf with all that elasticity.
Now I know what that is.
Nightshade vegetables. You better get that stuff out of that weak sauce.
Nightshade vegetables.
Stay out the man box.
If CeCe knows that it's not great for him, and you know theoretically it's not great for him, as much as the fan, the consumer of the product enjoys it.
Tony Dungy came out with the statement.
Tony Dungy. Came out with the same instance. This is not
good for him.
What about Doug Marrone and Tom Coughlin and the D-backs coach? Like, don't you think that it's not good for him?
I'm the wrong person to talk to because I played.
No, you're the right guess.
I played with Rex, right? And he enjoyed this stuff. I mean, I played with T. Sizzle. I played with Ray. I played with Air Reed. I played with Chris McAllister, Samari Rowe. Everybody was talking, you know. And that's what happens because when you talk, then you have to back it up, so it makes you play at a higher level because you know you're a target.
But Bart, there's a difference between talking and what he's doing. Doing, which is taking his talk on a national
scale. I would argue this is the more courageous way to do it.
Sure it is, but it might not be right.
Putting a target on his back.
Sherman was the last one.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.